Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast, the Spider-Man Years. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we're on the sixth episode of the Spider-Man animated series, The Sting of the Scorpion. Mm-hmm. So yet another one-off introduction origin episode for a Spider-Man villain, really establishing the galaxy of his bad guy universe. Does that make sense?
I guess so. I didn't remember the origin story of the Scorpion at all. I mean, I know him as a character, but
yeah, he's one of the lesser, dopier villains that Spider-Man fights, mainly because of the character of the guy who is the Scorpion.
I thought this was pretty scandalous.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, that, like, well, we'll get into it. We'll get into the story, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, the Scorpion, just to check our boxes here, another green villain joining the ranks of Dr. Octopus, Mysterio, and the Lizard thus far. But a character named, what's his name? Gargan. Gargan. A very bizarre name. From Brooklyn, we discover in this episode.
With a real Brooklyn accent.
Yeah, a real...
Just like us?
Yeah, perhaps. he's like a... I mean, he's just some creepy sleazeball guy that J. Jonah Jameson hires to track, not Spider-Man, but Peter Parker. Because this episode really answers a lot of questions we've been raising in the last few about why does JJ hate Peter...
JJJ.
Why does he hate Peter Parker? We get into more of like why he hates Spider-Man. We get into his backstory that establishes him as a more sympathetic character, despite him being in this episode really insanely irresponsible. and we'll get into all that stuff. I just want to say generally that I just still like the flavor of these one-off episodes with the introduction to the different villains.
Yeah,
I
mean, me too.
I do prefer the continuity stuff we're going to get later in season one and throughout the rest of the seasons as we go forward. But these are just, like, nice, solid episodes, you know? As I was watching, I felt like, man, Spider-Man is such a treat of a show. It's just... sort of, it's just like this real addictive quality to it. All the episodes are bright and colorful and fast-paced and witty. And it's just everything I could want out of a Spider-Man cartoon, which now sounds kind of like, it's almost like an old hat thing to say, because there's so many superhero movies and cartoons and millions of different like properties and versions of things. But when we were kids, there wasn't like that much of this kind of stuff, you know? There was... the X-Men series, which was a blessing, and the Batman series. I mean, it was a whole revolution in these new superhero series, but it's not like you had a long, prolonged, serialized take on Spider-Man that, that was serious and, like, intensive. You know, you had the cornier cartoons from the 60s, 70s, and 80s, but they were, like, real one-off, almost like Hanna-Barbera style, basically. But here you get, like, the serious, like, Marvel goodness. So I was just, I just had that feeling watching this episode too. It's like, wow, it's just a great product. You know, it's like everything I really like could have asked for as a kid. So anyway, this episode opens again with the continuing bouncing back and forth romantic adventures of Peter Parker.
Right.
So it seems like now we're on like, from episode to episode, he alternates between Mary Jane and Felicia Hardy.
Right. And we don't know if that's due to continuity discrepancies with like streaming services or maybe it's just part of the story.
Well, either way, even if it's the episodes are not aired in order, it's still working for me in terms of
like, it doesn't matter,
right, getting an idea of his like social situation, which is pretty funny that he's, I mean, is the basic premise that he's neither the boyfriend of Felicia or Mary Jane. Felicia makes that clear in this episode. That
right, he's dating both of them, it seems like, or trying to date both
of them. Right, he's trying to date both of them. So it's not like, we know Felicia's kissed him in like the first or second episode or something, but it's not like he's getting really far with either of them, it seems, at this point, right?
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, Felicia's pretty cold to him. Like, at the start of this episode, it's pretty humorous because... he thinks they're on a date again, but she's like, no, you're just tutoring me.
Right.
Because you're really smart. And
she's like, boyfriends are a dime a dozen. A good tutor is really hard to find.
Yeah.
You know? He's like asking her out to dinner. She's like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah. She's like, dinners are for boyfriends. You're just a tutor.
Yeah.
And but the way she's saying it all is very flirty, and it's very like, it seems like there's definitely more there than she's saying. So she's just, like, I think she's just having fun, like, stringing him along.
Yeah.
Like, I think she's, like, legitimately trying to be flirtatious with him in her way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's keeping him at a distance, but she's, like, having fun with him all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, like, trying to, like, horn his way in, you know, any way he can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's interesting is that the problem of him being Spider-Man, like, is inadvertently drawing her closer to him.
Right, it's keeping her interested because he's, like, unpredictable and he'll, like, disappear sometimes.
Yeah, he's just outright cold to her unintentionally. Yeah, and she likes it. It's like he's inadvertent. Like, if he wasn't Spider-Man and he was just following around sort of begging for dates, she probably would get tired of him and think, like, oh, this guy's a loser.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he, like, in this episode, there's a bank robbery or something right off the bat, and she's ranting about how, like, you're not boyfriend material.
Right, and he like, runs off to be Spider-Man.
Yeah, coldly disappears.
And she's, like, enamored.
Furious. Well, yeah, she's furious at first, then enamored.
Yeah.
So it's a really funny dynamic between those two. Anyway, so, like I said, there's a bank robbery explosion. Spider-Man notices that there's somebody following him that he refers to as creepy.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out to be Mac Gargan. His name is very hard to say.
Why?
I don't know. I just find that an odd combination
his
of syllables.
His full name is McDonald. Does that help you?
No, it doesn't help. So, anyway, he's, you know, Spider-Man thinks he's trailing him, but in reality we learn he's trailing Peter. We'll get to that later. So Spider-Man's stopping your standard New York City bank robbery where the crooks have missile launchers, which is pretty insane. Sort of similar to the X-Men, the weaponry in this universe is a little more advanced than you think it would be. I mean, that's mainly due to censorship. They're not allowed to show guns with bullets.
Right.
It's a lot of laser guns and missile launchers. Somehow, those seemingly more dangerous than an actual gun.
Definitely.
But, yeah, but I like that Spider-Man makes a comment. He really webs up these criminals, and he makes an interesting comment noting that his webbing is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, he says it in jest, but I do like to think that it's coming from a truthful place. However, he's mixing those chemicals together to make his homebrew webbing is probably not, certainly not easy, and it probably does cost him money. But luckily, he's been photographing himself in the act of Spider-Man, and we cut to Peter Parker with Robbie Robertson, his boss at the Daily Bugle, and he's dropping off the latest Spider-Man pictures. Robbie Robertson can't believe how good of a photographer Peter is. And this is, you know, an interesting dynamic in his life. He has to play coy about how he's really getting these amazing shots of Spider-Man all the time, which is, you know, basically his bread and butter. And
I don't understand why he doesn't just make up a story and say, like, yeah, I know Spider-Man, you know? Like,
yeah.
Spider-Man, like, doesn't mind me taking pictures of him because, you know, we have, like, an understanding or, you know, like, something.
I think that he says that more explicitly later in the series at some point. In this episode, he definitely takes a different tact.
Yeah.
But I think that's something that comes up more. Like, the connection between Peter and Spider-Man becomes more prevalent to different characters, and it becomes prevalent to JJ in this episode.
Yeah.
And so, speaking of which, we finally get some insight into why JJ hates Peter. He doesn't understand the connection between Peter and Spider-Man, how Peter can get those pictures. He knows something is fishy is going on.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way anyone could get that close to these seemingly random events with this, you know, enigmatic character swinging around New York City.
Mm.
So in light of that, like we said, he's hired this guy, Mac Gargan. God damn it. He's hired him to trail not Spider-Man, but Peter Parker to see how he's getting these pictures.
Mm-hmm.
He's paying Gargan, you know, handsomely for this. Peter has spying on them, so he knows what's up, too. So he decides to make an appearance as Spider-Man through JJ's office, as he does occasionally. And he, like, you know, he harshly threatens JJ, but he tries to establish cover for Peter Parker. He's like, tell your goon loser Peter Parker to stop photographing me, making me look bad.
Yeah.
And as for you, JJ, screw you too.
Right.
Like, you know, I'm coming for you. And then he also webs Gargan to the wall and blows all his money out of his hands, and humiliates him, which is something that sets up. But the things that Spider-Man says to JJ triggers him to JJ's tragic past, which this is like a plot element I forgot about. Like, I knew it was there, but like I didn't realize it was going to come this quick in the show's history.
Right.
So JJ like flashes flashes back to when he was a young man. He had a beautiful wife.
He has, like, a framed picture of him and his wife, like, on his desk still. So he's, like, right, looking at it as he's flashing back.
All right. And we know his son's going to come into play in the series, too. He's a famous character in the Spider-Man universe. But anyway, you know, so Spider-Man really triggers JJ. We'll get to that in a minute. But basically, you know, JJ just hates Spider-Man so much that he takes him to this guy named Professor Stilwell, who has access to the handy-dandy neogenic recombobulator.
Yeah.
Which seems to be one of the major MacGuffins in the Spider-Man universe.
Right.
The question is, I forget already, we saw Spider-Man's origin in one of the episodes, not so much with the spider yet, but did the spider fall into a neogenic recombobulator and then bit Peter Parker? Is that what we were to assume, I think?
I don't know.
I think it's possible. So I think this device, which is under the purview of Dr. Connors, who's Peter's mentor, who's mm-hmm. also the Lizard, as we know. Stilwell mentions Connors, saying, like, he mentions him. I forget if he says, like, oh, he warned me about this or something, or he's the only one that understands it. But anyway, the point is, like, this neogenic recombobulator is out there, and people are doing crazy experiments with it.
Constantly, it seems.
Right, so JJ sets up this guy, Mac Gargan. I said it wrong again. Gargan. he gives him, like, this weird scorpion costume and Stilwell blasts him with the neogenic recombobulator and cross breeds his DNA with that of a scorpion.
Cross-bobulates.
Yeah. Yeah, he cross-bobulates Gargan's DNA with a scorpion because he says a scorpion is the natural predator of the spider. Mm-hmm. That was a fun fact I did not realize about the insect kingdom. That's, like, a fact I bet, like, I probably knew when I was ages 6 to 8 and they teach you about bugs, but, like, you don't remember. You know, unless you, you know,
working. You let go of all those details.
Yeah. It seems like an awfully, like, dangerous mad scientist thing to do, like, wildly reckless by JJ, first of all, to mm-hmm. sponsor this event. Also insanely reckless by this Professor Stilwell character.
Yeah. And this Mac doesn't seem to understand what he's gotten himself into. He's wildly shaking his fists as he's got this, like, laser beam on him.
Yeah, it's pretty funny looking. it's this world where there's way more advanced technology than in the real world.
And no authorization forms to be signed.
Yeah, like, where scientists are, like, 50% way less ethical than they are in the real world, uh-huh. you know? Gargan gets turned into the scorpion. Again, another sort of classic Spider-Man villain, but he's, like, more of, like, a lower-level villain because mm-hmm. he's an idiot and he's dopey, you know?
And his vendetta isn't really against Spider-Man so much, yeah. you know? Like, it's more like... Well, this is what I thought was scandalous about this, right?
Yeah.
Is that, like, Jonah Jameson is the one that set up this whole thing. Like,
J. Jonah Jameson.
JJJ. He... I know. It's too long to say every time, but I
don't know what the first J stands for.
Isn't it J, like J-A-Y?
Is it? Okay.
J, like Homer Jason.
Let's not look it up, or let's let someone else tell us.
All right. Anyway, JJJ is the one who's responsible for Mac Gargan becoming Scorpion. Like, you know, good old Mac wouldn't have thought about this to begin with. So, you know, it's like...
He's just a pawn or a patsy.
Right. Yeah. And
he's a real traditional patsy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know. It's like a crazy part of this universe, you know? Because it's like, for the most part, JJ isn't, like, particularly malevolent, you know? He, like, doesn't like Spider-Man or Peter Parker, but he's not, like, villainous. And, like, they even show you a more compassionate side to his personality sometimes, you know? You get to, like, sympathize with him a little bit.
But he
so
is
here,
really,
he's, like, on the villainous side.
Yeah.
And that, like, I don't know. I guess it's not scandalous.
Well, so JJ...
JJ, he's this public figure, you know?
Yeah, I mean, he rides the line between trying to be on the side of good and justice, but also breaking the law to suit his own means.
Right.
So we saw that with the Mysterio episode a bit, too, where he's willing to go into alliance with these new supervillains as long as they promise him to get Spider-Man.
Right.
So he's also... He's like a part vigilante himself, this Jameson character. Like, a lot of characters taking the law into their own hands for their own, like, personal dramas or vendettas or whatever it might be.
Mm.
So, you know, at first this experiment seems to go pretty well. Scorpion is just in his powers are enhanced, or the guy Gargan is his powers are enhanced. He's super strong. He can stick to walls. They've given him a tail that Peter later compares to adamantium.
What do you mean powers are enhanced? He didn't have powers before.
Right, you know what I mean. His life has been enhanced.
Okay. His strength is enhanced.
Right, yes, yeah. So he's got the powers of a scorpion, I guess, in the ways that Spider-Man has the powers of a spider.
Right.
It
seems like he doesn't have to make his own acidic liquid.
Yeah, he's got like...
he doesn't have to manufacture it.
I don't know what that's all about. He's got some kind of prehensile technology tail they've attached to him that shoots acid.
Yeah.
And like I said, Peter says it's strong as adamantium, so a broader Marvel Universe reference. Another reference later we'll see is when Spider-Man meets a scorpion, he says, oh, if you want to try out for the Fantastic Four, you're like barking up the wrong tree or something. Mm-hmm. So some, you know, like some well-received Marvel Universe cameos. At least in its dialogue, anyway. But the answer that I thought for sure we'd get in this episode, I seem to remember as a kid that when they introduced the Scorpion, part of the tragedy for Gargan was that he couldn't get out of the costume once they did this to him. Like, it was bonded to his flesh or something. I thought for sure that was going to be the twist here. Mm-hmm. It turns out that's not what the twist is. It's that, like, later on we see the mutation advances too much, and it becomes, like, more freakish. His skin turns green, he grows claws out of his hands.
To me, that's the same, it's akin to having the suit, like, bonded to his flesh.
Yeah.
Because they say that it, like, keeps on, his mutation keeps on mutating.
Right, and that's a theme that's going to come up in the show heavily, is that out-of-control genetic mutation.
Mm.
Especially, most disgustingly, with Peter, in my opinion, mm-hmm. when he grows the six arms.
Right.
And then when later he turns into the large spider monster. And it's a problem that plagues him for, like, a whole season almost.
Right.
And it's pretty messed up. And it's, like, it's just interesting that the show really spirals down the tube of just, like, genetic science run amok and all the, like, dangers and fallbacks. I mean, it's something that's going to come up, too, with the character Morbius, the living vampire.
Yeah.
He's another one that I think his DNA gets crossed with the vampire bat or something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his powers get out of control. It just happens a lot. It's, like, a really interesting, dark and, like, slightly scary sci-fi premise that the show digs into deeply.
Yeah.
So Gargan here is, like, the first, like, real victim of it.
Mr. Sinister doesn't come up in this series, does he?
No, he doesn't. But that he would have been
well-placed. Been like a very natural crossover.
Yeah, you're
That's
right.
That's too bad.
Yeah, he would be a good Spider-Man villain. I'm sure he's probably met Spider-Man in the comics or something at some point. But in the context of this show, I think, yeah, Mr. Sinister would have been really well-placed.
Oh, well.
Yeah. Like I said in the like first episode we did about the show, it's like it's really the world of mad scientists more than anything. Mr. Sinister fits that to a bill. All right, anyway, so there's a funny scene here where we see Spider-Man swinging through New York City. He's being chased by Jameson in a helicopter, who has unleashed Scorpion after him. I just like the detail where Spider-Man says that he says he's got like three tests coming up. And his love life is obviously screwed up, you know, between Felicia and Mary Jane.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, man, thank God I have web-slinging to relax.
Yeah, I know.
Which...
just out fighting crime.
Well,
you know,
super relaxing. He's not even talking about the fighting crime aspect.
I know,
but
he's
but
web-slinging.
But that's a good point
you
make.
He always ends up finding crime with web-slinging.
So. Right, is that relaxing for him? It seems like he's asking for trouble when he's out there as Spider-Man.
Well,
he's not out there just cruising. You know,
unless sometimes he is, and we just don't see that in the show.
I'm sure
in the movie,
true.
They show that.
They showed
in the
general.
Spider-Man video game. That's like majority of what you do.
Yeah, I know, but he finds trouble whenever he's out there in the costume.
Yeah, right.
But it is funny how he says that he does use it for relaxation. But my question to you is, like, do you think
it's like flying, right?
Yeah.
So like, I could kind of see it, or swinging at least. You know,
yeah.
A very long swing.
Yeah.
Also, I thought the animation was fun. I don't know if it's in this scene, but one of the scenes in this, they're showing like a side view of him slinging.
Yeah.
And like the way they have his legs move as he's swinging, it's like one knee up at a time. It's almost like he's skipping, you know. He looks very like fancy free.
I've said it before in the show, like, I think that web slinging is one of the greatest wish fulfillment powers in general that they've cooked up for superheroes. And it's not cliche like flying. There's like a twist to it. It's flying, but it isn't. And it's kind of funny how they've essentially given Batman the same power. And I know Batman came before Spider-Man, but I mean,
yeah, he doesn't, grappling hooks.
He doesn't quite swing in the same way Spider-Man does. He, like, sort of does. I mean, in the video game, he definitely does. Mm-hmm. Like, you're swinging from grappling hook to grappling hook.
Yeah.
And using his cape to sort of hover around. But it's definitely more of a Spider-Man thing. And I think it's just, like, one of the coolest, like, modes of transportation any hero has. And
I just like how much explanation has to go into it, you know? It's like, all right, Spider-Man, like, he has this webbing, but he has to make it himself, but it costs money.
Yeah. And he runs out of it.
By the way, like, it evaporates after a certain amount of time or biodegrades, so there's no trace of it left.
And he can make different shapes out of it. And we see him in this episode.
Like, the whole thing is so unlikely, you know?
Yeah, I know. You're right. That's, like, the most unlikely. I mean, that's why in the first movie, Tobey Maguire, they made it, like, it was part of his mutation.
Right.
Was that just comes out of his arms.
Right.
But, you know, and that was a controversial thing because it goes against the comics. But the decision was like, well, it's so unlikely that anyone could invent web fluid, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it seems like a dumb coincidence that, like, he'd be able to do that. Because, but they've subsequently made in the two Spider-Man reboots, they gave him back the web slingers because it's just too cool of a plot device, I think.
Right.
Because all things said, he runs out of the webbing. It's like, it shows he's a scientist.
Right. It makes him more fallible, too.
Yeah. It's just like an essential, it's just like something, it's a great sci-fi idea. I think, like, there's a shot in Spider-Man Homecoming where he's in his science class and he's secretly mixing up, like, a batch in his desk.
He's, like, keeping it in a bottom drawer or something so nobody finds it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite shots of that movie when he's, like stirring it with a glass straw and you see it bubble up and turn to goo. And I don't know how he's going to, like, collect
contain
that from
it.
An overflown, I mean, over, you know, flowing beaker, but... Yeah. It's a very interesting aspect to his character. So, yeah, I love the web slingers, too. Anyway, so JJ's tracking him down in a helicopter. He's unleashed the scorpion on him. They get into a fight. JJ is, like, gratuitously cheering on the scorpion from the helicopter window.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that, in the end, Scorpion gets the best of Spider-Man. But just right before he's going to unmask Spider-Man under JJ's request, Scorpion notices himself in a puddle of water and sees that, like, his mutation is getting worse. Like I said, his skin's turning green.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting more freakish in appearance, like, more bestial, I guess. So he freaks out because he hates being insulted, and he, you know, he just wants to be given respect as a person. So now turning to a freak is not going to help him in that category.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then JJ goes back to his office, and he sees that Scorpion's running amok in the city, and he immediately regrets all this. Robbie Robertson sort of chews him out for it after JJ admits that I helped create him. And he then explains more of his backstory, that his wife was killed by a man in a mask because he was doing investigative journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy was trying to kill JJ, but he pushed her out of the way. Or something happened where the wife got in the way of the bullet. And so he says that he's vowed ever since to try to stop any criminal in a mask.
Right.
And that's why he specifically hates Spider-Man.
Right.
So really great motivation that makes sense and is logical. He's not just like a cigar-chomping hater of Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's gratifying that he has a backstory like that.
Yeah.
And sad.
Yeah.
And tragic. But
I mean, they really haven't gone there.
Depth to his character, you know? But then, like, Robbie points out right away, like, yeah, but you helped create the Scorpion, like...
Yeah, you've done
it. He points out the irony.
Yeah, and that's like the best kind of superhero irony is the ironic kind.
Right.
Right? The tragic ironic kind. It's interesting. I mean, it's an element that they didn't explore in any Spider-Man movie. JJ's reasoning for hating Spider-Man, he just kind of does.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't seen him in the MCU yet. But still, you know, I like this. This is the motivation they should use. It's great.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's going on? So... In the meantime, Scorpion is really pissed off. He takes JJ hostage. Now he blames him for his fate.
Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to a phone call with Aunt May. We're tracking the phone calls. And as we've seen before, he's got his mask up to speak on the public telephone to Aunt May. She says, you have a date, or I've invited Mary Jane over tonight with her aunt for, like, tea or something.
Right.
Are you going to be there? He says, no, I'm too busy. But then, just as he's saying goodbye, he lowers his mask again and continues talking to Aunt May.
And she says, oh, take care of yourself. You don't sound well.
She does say that?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
Okay, so interesting. So it's still consistent that when he has the mask on, his voice is muffled a bit.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
there's our answer.
Okay, yeah, you're right. There's the answer to whether or not, you know, his voice changes with the mask on or off. Anyway, Scorpion is headed towards the Oscorp nuclear reactor. He has this, like, insane thought that he says, well, radiation caused me to be this way. I'm going to use radiation to turn back to normal.
Yeah, great idea.
No one challenges Scorpion on this. Like, JJ doesn't say you're nuts.
Right.
I think he says he's nuts for other reasons, but... But his plan is to, like, go to the power plant, like, smash it open and just expose himself to radiation. JJ says, like, you know, if you do this, the whole city's going to be destroyed. It'll be covered in radiation. And they actually, at one point, they show a scene of a ruined New York by radiation, just to get the point home to kids that radiation is bad, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Spider-Man is there on the scene, too. They get into a fight at the power plant. It's your classic third act stuff we've seen in the show, like a third sort of warehouse or a power plant, some kind of location, an industrial location where Spider-Man fights the villain. He has to press a red button in time or else the nuclear neutron rods are going to overboil. At various points, he saves JJ's life with web slinging and web fluid.
Yeah, more than once.
And JJ does notice it. And JJ actually saves Spider-Man's life, too, when he's being squeezed to death by Scorpion. So they're both saving each other's lives. In the end, they manage to stop the Scorpion. Scorpion has a funny line, said, I never should have left Brooklyn. Which is just funny to hear in his funny Brooklyn accent. Spider-Man rightly assumes, well, hey, we've saved each other's life a few times. You get that I'm not a bad guy. You're not a bad guy. I guess we'll call it even. And JJ's like, hell no. I'm not stopping until you're unmasked and eliminated. Mm. He goes, at first he's just going to say unmasked.
Right.
He's like, no, I want you eliminated. I want you dead, which is kind of crazy.
Right, yeah. He's That's like, another one of those code words, right? Like, we talk about in the X-Men all the time that they always say, like, destroy instead of kill or die.
I think eliminated's more brutal than stronger. Destroy. Yeah, definitely. But it's pretty dark.
It's also a more complicated vocabulary word, so it's, like, maybe shielding the younger viewers in some way.
Yeah, you're right. He's not saying, I want you killed or murdered. He says, I want you eliminated, which is, you know, like you said, not quite like the worst, but also pretty menacing.
Yes.
Spider-Man swinging off, he compares his relationship to J.J. Moriarty in Sherlock Holmes.
Mm.
Then he's, you know, heading back home. Felicia drives up in her fancy red convertible. And, of course, she's angry at first, but then she says that she's intrigued by Peter's behavior and that, he says, oh, well, how about dinner now? And she says, no, not dinner.
Maybe lunch.
Maybe
and
lunch.
She drives away.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right.
Yeah. And then you see Peter walking off in the distance in Queens and then the Spider-Man silhouetted in the sky. And that's
that,
like,
was weird.
It's weird, but it's one of the most famous drawings of Spider-Man from the comic books. It's like a classic image of him, like the burden of Spider-Man hangs over his psychosis,
right?
Like a huge specter in the sky. It weighs heavy on him.
Yeah.
So in the end, like another really solid episode with like some really good pathos, some good like Marveliness, a new villain to add to the rogues gallery. I thought at the end we were gonna hear about what happened with sort of blowing off Aunt May and Mary Jane. But we don't really hear
maybe
about
next
that.
Time.
We get more closure on Felicia, right? Yeah, maybe next time is right. And so I just think another good episode, a really solid show. Like through I'm a 34-year-old man. And I just have to say, it's still an entertaining show, like from minute one to the 22nd minute. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing boring about it. It's not like stupid. It doesn't feel like it's a show made for 10-year-olds. It's just like a really solid piece of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Spider-Man tale told as well as it can be told.
Yeah.
Whatever Marvel does and Sony does with Spider-Man going forward, like this, you know, it's not going to get much better than what we've seen in this series. For instance, the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse movie was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And really great, but really, like, this show, as we discussed in some other episodes, it covered a lot of that ground in that movie in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's alternate Spider-Man, the consequences, the pathos, it's like all here too, you know? So it's a really wonderful show, and I'm really happy to be talking about it with you every week, Sonia. Before we go, I want to mention that we did see Aquaman, And I don't want to go into like a long half an hour conversation about it.
Okay. But you loved it.
Love is a strong word.
You enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. I enjoyed it while it was on.
Uh-huh.
I thought it was too long.
Uh-huh.
Which is a common complaint. It's a 2.5 hour movie.
I don't see what the big deal is with that.
Yeah.
I feel like people always say, like, if the movie is more than like an hour 45,
yeah,
they're like, oh, it's too long. Like, the whole point of going to see a movie is that you're going to spend like a couple few hours being entertained.
Yeah.
Like, so what if it's 45 minutes more than, like, I don't know.
I don't
have an attention span.
This is what I have to say to that.
2 hours? Is it?
No, that's not it.
No?
It's Aquaman the movie.
Uh-huh.
It's not The Godfather, which I just rewatched this week.
That's what I'm saying.
That's
okay?
A 3 hour movie.
Like, that's a long movie.
Yeah.
Right?
This is a half an hour shorter than The Godfather.
Is it that there's, like, too much content in it that's, like, should have been cut because it's not relevant to the story or not interesting to watch? Like, does it have to do with the content of the movie?
It's because it's the nature of the movie. It's not, the movie was good,
uh-huh,
but it's not so compelling that I need to spend 2.5 hours with Aquaman.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not saying any, I'm not like suggesting that you should have cut this scene, you should have cut that scene. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure there's scenes they could have cut.
Yeah.
But my point is, it's just not. The first Aquaman movie is not the experience to me that warrants 2.5 hours. The next Avengers movie, Avengers 4 Endgame,
yeah,
that is said to be a 3 hour movie. Now, in that instance, I'm like all for a 3 hour movie to finalize the Marvel chapter, you know, that we've come to at this point.
Uh-huh.
Like, there's a lot of points to get to, a lot of closure I need to see, and a lot of characters and stuff.
Okay.
Like, that, I'm prepared for a 3 hour movie, and it's justified.
Yeah.
Aquaman 1 as a 2 hour movie is kind of ridiculous to me, just in general. But
all I'm saying is, you voluntarily watched Gone with the Wind, the yeah, Ten Commandments,
yeah,
Ben-Hur.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean? Like, the length of the movie is kind of, you know, 2 hours versus 2.5 hours is kind of splitting hairs for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, that aside, I don't feel like I enjoyed it quite as much as you did.
Yeah, well, what tell me your thoughts on the movie. I'm curious. Because we didn't really talk about it.
That's all I have to say about it, really. It was fine. It was like The Little Mermaid for teenage boys.
You're right. I mean, and then the character Mira kind of basically looks like the Little Mermaid.
Yeah, the red hair.
The red hair and the green outfit.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm
with you. I thought it was, I'm like a half a step above what you felt. Like, I thought it was good. I think that is, like, remarkable considering how bad the DC movies have been generally.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was better than Wonder Woman. I thought, because Wonder Woman, and a lot of people said this, but the third act of that just falls off an edge.
Yeah.
It gets, like, less watchable as you're, like, when you're trying to rewatch Wonder Woman. It's not as rewatchable because it just doesn't hold up towards the end.
Okay.
Do you
feel like Aquaman is rewatchable?
I'm going to watch it one more time.
Yeah.
What I liked about it is what, you know, a lot of people have said that, like, you know, you watch a lot of movie review videos and hear a lot of podcasts, so you end up repeating a lot of similar criticisms.
Mm-hmm.
But it had, like, an epic, like, fantasy feel to it, which was a refreshing thing, you mm-hmm. know? It's hard to make an Aquaman movie because the character's ridiculous, is, you know, for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But they figured out a way to do it. They made it, like, a high fantasy movie. It was kind of like Lord of the Rings meets Star Wars style.
I think actually the character design really didn't do it for me.
What, you mean like Jason Momoa?
He was fine. I mean, all like the sea creature monsters and stuff like that, where they like face off against each other.
Yeah.
And like, it had a very, yeah, like you're saying, like reminiscent of like Star Wars, but I don't know what exactly bothered me about it. Like, the story itself was good.
Yeah.
You know,
it made sense.
Okay.
It was logical. You know, the action scenes looked really good, especially the scene in Sicily when they're fighting against the Black Manta guy with
right.
the laser beam head.
Yeah.
I like that. But what was I going to say? I don't know. I mean, this movie's made $1 billion worldwide.
And they're all riding,
which is insane.
Sharks.
Seahorses.
Like,
yeah.
I don't know.
You aren't
oh,
into
yeah,
the
those seahorses.
Well, you don't like sea creatures in general. That's your thing. You don't like aquariums.
All right.
That's
but,
a secret about Sonya.
Yeah. But it's not that I disliked it because I thought it was so frightening and unsettling. I thought the character design was very... What's the guy's name in Star Wars where, like, Anakin's a little kid and he's facing off against that other racer that has, like, those tendrils out of his nose.
Sebulba or something?
Yeah. The sea creatures reminded me of him.
Yeah.
And it was, like, they're too, like, tendrily.
There was, like, a... I don't know. There was a drip of Phantom Menace this movie because, like, they go to... In Naboo, in that movie, they go underwater and meet the Jar Jar Binks people.
Right.
And there's an element of that here. Exactly. And when you have a CGI underwater movie with underwater creatures and stuff, it does make you think about Star Wars Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, is not good. I mean, that might be controversial to some people.
Mouth,
yeah. Kind of. Yeah, for me too. But, yeah, I mean, I don't like underwater movies in general for the most part. Like the Steve Zuzu.
You didn't like that one?
No, I love that. I'm saying that one accepted. I was going to say. Yeah.
Oh.
What's the name of that movie?
The Life Aquatic.
Yeah. Yeah. Wes Anderson.
Yeah.
So, like, a water movie is not my favorite in general, just as, like, a...
And I loved The Little Mermaid when I was a kid.
You did? Yeah. That was, you know, that's one of my least favorite Disney cartoons as a kid.
I don't know.
What do you think that... How do you feel about Disney remaking all the cartoons from our childhood into live-action movies? Isn't that bizarre? It's like come up and, like, it's... I almost feel like it's snuck up on the world at large that they're even doing it, you know? Because at first, maybe it's like, what was the first one? Beauty and the Beast?
Right.
Probably wasn't that. It's probably like 101 Dalmatians, really, if you go back to the 90s or something.
Well, I mean, reboots are a big deal in Hollywood.
Yeah.
And how are you going to reboot a cartoon? How are you going to improve on, like, that animation if you're going to do standard animation unless you made it, like, a Pixar sort of thing?
Yeah, so they would do, so instead of making a 3D animation, they're making them live-action movies. Like, The Lion King is going to be a live-action.
I wonder if it has to do with marketing. Like, you know, you go to Disney World and you, like, you as a kid, like, you meet the characters or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's always this element of letdown because the character is a real person in a costume. Obviously, they don't look like an animated feature film.
Yeah.
But if the movie is of a person in a costume and then you're in Disney World and you meet a person in a costume, you're like, wow.
Was that your experience as a kid that you were upset that Mickey was a real person instead of a cartoon walking around?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of bizarre.
I knew, obviously, that Mickey is drawn as a cartoon, so, like, I understood that it wasn't going
to
be like that.
But aren't most kids' fantasies that their cartoons come to life? That's the whole premise behind why superhero movies are so famous, is the cartoons, the comics, finally came to real flesh and blood.
Yeah, right.
So that's kind of bizarre for you. You'd rather see them walking around as cartoons.
Well,
so, that's,
I mean,
even
that's
more
not possible, though.
Drop some acid and go to Disneyland as my... answer to that. But Aquaman, what else can I say about it? The thing I don't like about it, I like Jason Momoa. I thought Jason Momoa was entertaining.
Yeah, me too.
But ultimately, I don't like the take on the character. And I don't think it's his fault because I think it was like a Zack Snyder creation for the most part. Mm. But just like the bro-y... like bro-man Aquaman is just like not what I would have done. I got into this conversation with this guy Bo, who posts on our, I think his name is Bo Franco. He posts on our X-Men Test podcast Facebook group a lot. He posts the most wonderful pictures.
Oh yeah, the pictures are really cool.
Amazing. He has all the X-Men toys, all the Spider-Man toys, and he like builds little sets and he takes these dramatic photographs of them. Everyone has to go and check them out. They're really cool.
Yeah.
And I asked him, you know, as a kid, I had these DC superhero action figures and I lost them all. I mean, the story is like, my dad's friend from work, gave me a crate full of all the DC action figures, heroes and villains, like 20 of them total, all in pristine condition. They weren't in the blister packs, but they're all in pristine condition. They all had their capes and little accessories in their hands. And he gave them to me when I was like 5 years old. And it was the most wonderful present any kid could have ever gotten. And I must have been five in like 1989, 1990 or something, right? And immediately I went up to my room and I threw them out the window to see if they could fly.
Sure, like you do.
And I and this might be a distorted childhood memory because nothing's adding up. But of course, I immediately ran downstairs to the backyard to pick them up. And I couldn't find most of them.
Maybe you threw him in the neighbor's yard by accident.
I remember looking in the neighbor's yard.
Huh.
I looked, and it's not like my backyard is filled with, like, like ditches or connected to the forest or something. Like, no, it's just like a little enclosed backyard with like a cement part and a grass part, and that was it. There was no like plate. It couldn't fall down a sewer ditch, nothing. And I remember just searching forever, and I couldn't find them except for a few. Like, I found like Robin and Mr. Freeze I had, and I had them saved for years. So this proves that this wasn't a hallucination to begin with, you know, that these toys existed.
It's a hallucination, but let me tell you, I've watched a five-year-old pick up a couple of crayons and use them and then put them down and then walk away and then be like, where are those crayons?
So let me finish the story, right? So the point is, this is one of the first major regrets of my life. I was like, what happened to them? Where's Superman? Where's Batman? Where'd they go? Like, I just lost them. I had Wonder Woman. I had Aquaman. I had all the villains. Joker. Mr. Freeze, I've never kept. I put him in my mother's freezer. He was in there for 20 years, just sitting in my mom's freezer. I think she eventually threw him out, which it turns out was a mistake. Anyway, so I asked this guy, Bo. I said, what were the... I can't Google these action figures. I don't even know what brand they were called because I never had the packaging. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, those are probably like Kenner, Mattel... they're called like DC Superpowers or something. That was the name of the brand. I was like, great, I'm going to Google them and I want to buy some. You know, in this past year, I bought a bunch of X-Men figures. Amazingly, on Amazon, you can buy a Gambit, a Professor X, an Iceman, the original action figures from our youth from the X-Men cartoon. You can buy them for like $20 on Amazon in their full packaging. I was like, wow, that's amazing. That's so weird that they're still for sale and they're relatively cheap, you know? I was like, but I really want those DC characters back to reclaim that part of my childhood that I lost. I was like, oh, maybe it's just like the Amazon thing, you know, cheap, stupid action figures. I can have them again. No, they're like thousands of dollars. They're insane collector's items. And like, and even if they're broken and fucked up, like this one guy was selling like a batch of 10 of them and their arms were missing. He's like, I'll accept $500 for this batch of 12. I was like, what the, this is so unfair.
He picked them all up out from under your window.
I know, yeah. And so I was like, I can't recollect those characters, obviously. But anyway, my overall point, going back to Aquaman, is that the bright colors of those original action figures, you know, like the classic costume configurations of those action figures, the doofy looks on their faces, that to me is what DC is all about.
Yeah, obviously. Well, this is the problem that everyone has with Zack Snyder.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So to me, DC is like a cornball 1950s, like eating a vanilla ice cream cone in the summer, like I'm going to read an Aquaman comic kind of like mentality. It's like a real throwback to a simpler time of sci-fi and fantasy. Mm-hmm. And when you like try to update it and make him cool by giving him a bunch of tattoos and long hair and a beard, which I know they've redrawn Aquaman in the years to sort of look like that in a way too. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it just doesn't, that to me is not what struck me as a kid, why I like DC characters.
So you want him to have more of like a Superman, like happy-go-lucky sort of disposition?
Me personally, I do. Uh-huh. I'm not saying that's like what they should do. I don't know. That just might be my bizarre taste with it all, you know? Mm-hmm. But I like I said in the other podcast, we've been watching the Batman Adam West show every night and enjoying the hell out of it. Just bright, colorful, stupid. You know, like, I don't know. Like, to me, that's what DC is. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it's the Joel Schumacher version of Batman either. I don't like that, too. But there's, like, this nostalgic DC vision that has not, like, come to fruition for me yet that I think is out there that could work in some way that I'm excited to see. I think we saw the trailer for Shazam, and it kind of has that element a little bit because the way the costume looks, it really looks really bright and stupid, and the actor playing him has, like, that cowlick Superman haircut, and he looks really big and dumb, and that, to me, is, like, more in line with what I'm talking about and what I'd like to see, you know? Mm-hmm. And I'm hopeful, like, Wonder Woman, the sequel is going to be called Wonder Woman 1984. Maybe setting Wonder Woman in the 80s will introduce an element to that, too. It'll make it more fun and bright and, like, colorful and stupid. And I just need a little bit more stupidity in my DC movies and a little less, like, serious broisms. Mm-hmm. So that's the last thing I have to say about DC, Aquaman. That's the last thing I have to say about everything this week. I want to remind our fans, you can follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Sonia is not on Twitter, to everyone's chagrin. Join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group where you can interact with us and rate us 5 stars on your favorite podcast service. Sonia, any final words before we go?
That's it.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.